fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for a Friday. It is the end of the week. It is the day before Kevin Barker's 32nd birthday.
Yes, you got it right.
Kevin Barker is my co-host. We're brought to you still by Home Hardware.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't scared him away.
No.
Well done.
Good job.
Obviously, lots to talk about today. Marcus Stroman and his no-no bid yesterday, an 8-0 win over the Red Sox. The Jays went 5-2 in that homestand. Now they've got a 3-game series at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees. Mark Burley starts tonight. He hasn't won in, I believe, 12 starts at Yankee Stadium. And the Jays are 2-23. I'm blanking on the number.
0-16.
0-16, yeah. So that it's, well, when John Gibbons says Yankee Stadium's our personal house of horrors, he's not guilty of over-exaggeration.
I heard they weren't taking BP today.
So they are not taking BP today. John told us yesterday that they will take BP in the cage. They will not take in the cage, the indoor batting cage. They will not take BP on the field. He said because he didn't want him watching all the Yankees propaganda that they show in the on the center field scoreboard at Yankee Stadium.
Whatever works.
The Yankeeographies. I mean, you can only see Paul O'Neill, the greatness of Paul O'Neill, so many times on the screen before.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it just kind of starts interfering with your thought process. So they will be hitting indoors today at Yankee Stadium. Marcus Stroman yesterday. I mean, I'm trying to think the last time we saw Aaron Sanchez pitch two innings in relief on Wednesday. We saw Marcus Stroman throw seven innings.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday and dominate. I'm trying to remember the last time we saw two homegrown Blue Jays pitchers come in and, you know, put that type of a performance together back to back on back to back days.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're seeing an ace in the making with the Jays. I think Stroman is figuring it out, know how to throw strikes and get ahead of guys, and he's confident. When he's confident, man, he's fun to watch.
Yes, he is. Seven innings pitched, one hit, seven Ks, two walks, 97 pitches, 66 strikes. And the hit meant that John Gibbons didn't have to make that decision. We were all wondering about what happens if the kid carries a no-hitter into the ninth inning. And you're trying to keep track of his pitches. But we've got a lot about Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman celebrated in fine form in New York City last night, and we'll talk about that. But before we deal with Marcus Stroman, I don't think there is anybody. Now, I think I'm pretty safe in saying that there's nobody around baseball right now who's done as much, seen as much as Mel Didier. Mm-hmm. And longtime scout. I mean, that doesn't even. I guess that begins to describe Mel Didier's career. We at Sportsnet will have a documentary on Mel's career, Scout's Honor, and we're very pleased at this time to be joined by Mel Didier. Mel, thanks so much for doing this today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
So, you're wearing the 1988 LA Dodgers World Series ring.
That'll never come off.
No. And tell us a little bit about why you're wearing, in particular, the 88 ring.
Well, I had been assigned to scout the teams, and there were three of us, Jerry Stevenson and myself, and Gary Sutherland, been assigned to scout various teams. And I had the Oakland club and picked up a little something that probably told the story of the whole World Series, and that was that Eckersley really, really liked when he had three and late in the game. He only he only pitched in the ninth inning. And as you know, he's probably one of the greatest relief pitchers that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
His masterful control. One year he only walked four hitters in the whole season. I mean, that's what kind of control he had. And he loved to get left-handed hitters in a situation where if the tying a winning run was at second or third, and he backdoor, what we call a backdoor slider, and 3-2 count, when most guys are looking for a fastball, they figure he doesn't want to walk you and all that. Well, he had command of this thing, and he would take the black off of the plate. He really had masterful control. And I saw him do this to Boggs. I saw him do this to Brett and good left-hand hitters. And so I just made a note, and we had a booklet for him. I had coached football at LSU for years, and I copied this book. It was this big, and we broke down every hitter and so forth, and we gave it to the players on Friday. We were playing Saturday afternoon game, first game. And that morning, Tommy Lasorda had us come in and talk about various players and pitchers and all that. And I had the pitchers, and when I got through, I just turned to the left-hand hitters, and Kirk Gibson, Mike Socia, Mike Davis, all these guys. I said, new left-hand hitters, just remember this. If it does come up, it probably won't, but if it does come up and there's a 3-2 count and the winning run is at second or third and you're a left-handed hitter only, he's going to throw you a backdoor slider and you can bank on it. That's what's going to happen. And as you both of you probably know, great athletes remember.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of athletes forget in the excitement, all the hollering and 50,000 people and all. Well, Kirk was hurt bad, couldn't hardly walk. In fact, he hit a ground ball and couldn't hardly, he couldn't have run to first base.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got to 3-2, he said, Mel, I stepped in, and this is noticeable on the film, and he said, I backed out, and I said, I could hear your voice. Partner, you better believe it. It's going to be a backdoor slider. Stepped in, and he said, as soon as it came out of his hand, I saw what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he hits a home run. Now, you, as we all know, batting practice, you pop balls up, you know what's coming, you hit ground balls. Well, this guy is an extraordinary player, and he's a pressure guy, and he takes it and hits a home run. And that's the backdoor slider story. And Kirk was generous enough. Usually a lot of times players either forget or they don't remember what scouts say.
Mm-hmm.
But he was kind enough to say that, well, Mel had told us this and so forth. Whether they knew it or not, I think it helped. But the guy that handles the bat's got to do it. Mm-hmm. That's who's got to do it. And he did it. And he's one of the greatest pressure athletes that I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. I've been around a lot of guys in my lifetime, 63 years in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long career, and he's one of the best I've ever been around.
Mel's been in the game for 63 years, he says, Mel Didier, with the Tigers, the Milwaukee and Atlanta Braves, the Expos, the Dodgers, the Mariners, the Diamondbacks, the Texas Rangers, now a senior advisor to the Toronto Blue Jays. And Scouts Honor, the Mel Didier story, by the way, will air on Saturday, immediately following the Blue Jays and Yankees game on Sportsnet. Mel, well, I'll ask you this. Who was the first player you signed?
I signed a player by the name of Butler Powell. I was I was at LSU and I played football and baseball there. I had a chance to go to the Chicago Bears as a linebacker and had a chance to go to Detroit. I went up to Briggs Stadium. They flew me up there and they worked me out as a pitcher. And I had a good arm. I didn't have very good control. And I signed, and John McHale Sr., who was president of the club, had a big part in my early career.
Mm-hmm.
He was the assistant scouting director, and he signed me in Briggs Stadium. And I went on and played that first year, went into a Class C league, I believe, and did okay. I went to spring training, and I hurt my arm real bad. They sent me to John Hopkins. Mm-hmm. That was the place to go. There were no operations in, none of the stuff that goes on today. And I had a tear in my shoulder. They took x-rays, and after 3 days, they said, we can't do anything for you. Go back, and I went back to Lakeland and stayed around and pitched in a little Class D league in hot weather, trying to get it back. It didn't. So what I did, I retired, mm-hmm. and I told John about it. The next year, John called me, and he was now the scouting director for the Tigers, and he wanted me as a part-time scout in Louisiana where I lived. And so I became that, and then the following year, he became general manager. And he really helped my career as I went along. And John said, I want you to be a full-time scout, Mississippi, Louisiana, and so forth. And that's how I got cranked up in the game. He moved to the Milwaukee Braves as general manager. That's when they had Spahn, Sane, and all of the guys. I moved with him. Mm-hmm. He moved Milwaukee Braves moved to Atlanta Braves. I moved with him. He went to the commissioner's office. I went back to football. I coached football at LSU.
Okay.
And for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we won the Peach Bowl and Sugar Bowl then. Mm. But John was in the commissioner's office. He calls me and he says, Mel, he said, I want you to be scouting director and player development director for Montreal. And so I went there, and he had a big part in getting my career started. Mm-hmm. And later on, I went to the Dodgers and stayed with him for a long time. But it's difficult. It's difficult to put your finger on the one player that I signed early in the career. He was a AAA player. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have a good idea. I learned the hard way. And at that time, there was no. it was really a heart bending type of thing for a scout, because a young scout, because the older scouts, I can remember George Digby, great scouts, guys that really knew what to do. And here I am, just a young guy trying to learn, and I'm signing a player, and he gets a AAA, and I think I've done something. And I remember Atlee Donald, a great pitcher for the Yankees and a great scout up in North Louisiana, and I said, son, they ain't nothing. You got to get them to the big leagues if you're going to be a good scout. Mm-hmm. And he was right. Mm. And from that day on, I got an idea of what it took. And there was a lot of things that happened. I love the open market rather than the way they do it now. Mm-hmm. The guys that could get after it, stay on the road, work out. I had a player that I found out about that lived in Sandy Flats, Mississippi. 13 kids, graduate class. Mm-hmm. Name was Marlon Murphy. And I had a contact in Mississippi, a scout, a coach, rather, told me, he said, Mel, you ought to see this guy. He said, he's 6'4", about 195. He said, he can run. He's an outfielder. He said, got power. He said, as crude as he can be. And so I go to Sandy Flats. And Sandy Flats, there's a post office and a filling station. And he lives in a home, in a house, one room with his mother. His dad had passed away. They had a kitchen in that room. They had a bed, two beds in that room, and they had a couch in that room. And that's what they lived in. Hmm. And Marlon, I saw him, could run and all that. And so I signed him. I got a feel for him. Jim Fannin, who was then and later on my boss at Montreal, Jim Fannin was the scouting director. And so Jim really loved Marlon, and he got to the big leagues, but not about a 4A type player.
Right.
But could swing the bat, had power, but couldn't hit a breaking ball, and he had really problems. Mm-hmm. But here's a kid that – that I looked at, and I said, this is the kind of quality player. I'm one of these guys. I'm not much for pissants playing baseball. I like the big, strong guys. I mean, now, there, as Al Campanis, who was my boss for 17 years, was one, probably the greatest baseball mind I'd ever been around, as he said, there's always exceptions to the rule.
Mm-hmm. You know?
He said, there's the little guy, Pedroia, for instance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's the little guy. But he said, you get too many of them, you're not going to win. He said, you got to have the guys that can get it done. And so I lived and died by that. And very fortunate in signing a lot of great players. And, of course, Andre Dawson, Carter, and those guys, when I went to Montreal, we really turned some players out there. And then I later went and was assistant to Al with the Dodgers for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mel, you mentioned talent. What's the one talent that stood out to you in your whole career that you said, wow, that's some kind of player? The one guy.
The one guy.
Yeah.
Andre Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
I signed Andre Dawson. I saw him. I didn't even tell our own scout. I was scouting director and player development director, and I saw him in a practice game against a junior college. He played for Florida A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him, and I can show you the report. I kept it. In fact, it's now in the Hall of Fame. Is exactly the duplicate of Henry Hank Aaron, who I saw with the Milwaukee Braves when we signed him, the quickness in his bat. And the other thing, steel eyes. Look you in the eyeball and belly button to belly button. I had a famous saying, eyeball to eyeball, we're going to make you not just a player, we're going to make you a man. Well, he was a man, I'll tell you. And he turned out to be a great player, a great person.
That's awesome.
Mel Didier joins us on Baseball Central. 60 years in the game, an advisor with the Toronto Blue Jays. Saturday, immediately following the Jays-Yankees game, Scouts Honor, the Mel Didier story, will be showing on Sportsnet. I know you get asked this. I've read your answer, but I want our listeners to get it as well. Best player you ever saw with your own eyes?
Joe DiMaggio, by far. Not by far. Willie Mays was close second. Two different type of players. Joe DiMaggio was stylish. If you know about his history and all of that, less strikeouts than... I mean, these guys today strike out 150 times, but he'd strike out 30 or 25 or 35. The one thing that people don't realize about Joe DiMaggio, the biggest part of his career was played in a stadium, in Yankee Stadium, that was 426 feet in left center, where he hit a lot of balls. Mm. And that was eventually turned into the... where they put the statues out there. That's the old Yankee Stadium. But it was 420. Can you imagine 426 feet in left center? And he made great catches, and then he made them look easy. And everything he did, base running, hitting, was stylish. I mean, it was so easy. He got jumps on balls, and you'd say, well, he's not going to get to that ball. And he just looked like it just gracefully. Willie was just the opposite. He was a close second for me.
Mm-hmm.
He was an exciting player who, you know, I mean, flamboyant and made great catches and really had great ability. Probably if they played the game and really let him steal bases, he probably could have broken all kind of records stealing bases because he had a great instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy that really, really played the game because he really loved it. And those are the two best players I've seen. I've seen a lot of the great players from 48. In fact, I named three players at each position that I thought were the best players in this for this particular
documentary.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brooks Robinson was the best third baseman, I mean, that I saw. And I've seen so many great shortstops. And Bench was the best catcher, but I named a couple of guys behind him, and pitchers and so forth. But those were the two best players, all-around players that I've ever seen.
Mel Didier joins us on Baseball Central. Scouting, it's funny because the Leafs just hired a young assistant general manager who who is a numbers guy, and hockey's going through this whole battle, numbers, you know, analytics versus some of the old, what in hockey, what they'll call the old school thinking. How much has scouting changed since you started? I mean, I know there's numbers and laptops now, laptop computers, but a player's still a player, is he not?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The scouting has changed completely from what it was. We used to have maybe 10, 12, 15 scouts. They had an area, and they covered it. And I always said, you got to wake up in the morning, you got to run, and you got to see as many as you can see. Mm-hmm. And if you see enough of them, you're going to find them. If you the kind of guy, I never played golf. And in my documentary, I say that. People ask me, you're not going to play golf? Nope. I said, well, I'm playing golf. Somebody's mm-hmm. stealing players. So I said to myself, I'm not playing golf because I let the other scouts play golf because I'm going to go out and find players while they're playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fortunate I did. And I really believe that the scouting change now, they have so many people that look at players and they use all kind of different equipment now, mm-hmm. you know, pictures and so forth. And they want everybody to look at them. It used to be, for instance, I signed Ralph Garr. Mm-hmm. Ralph Garr was a played at Grambling, and he was a second baseman, had steel hands, ball hitting his glove, yeah. bounce out. And he was about 5'10", but could fly. And I love running speed.
Yeah.
And so I signed him with the Atlanta Braves. And I told our guys, put him in left field, put a tin hat on his head because he's going to get hit on the head a few times. But I said, I'm going to tell you one thing. He's going to steal base. He's going to score runs. And I said, he can be a good leadoff hitter. I work with him a little bit mm-hmm. on how to duck under balls. And today they don't do that much, mm-hmm. you know, spread out. In other words, you get 3-2 and you spread to make yourself a little lower. Mm-hmm. Without giving away or anything, mm-hmm. you're not doing just – and little things like that, players don't do that. All mm-hmm. they think about now is hitting a home run.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to get on base because if I get Ralph Garr on base, steal second,
mm-hmm.
we're going to score a run.
Yeah.
He scored 100 runs almost every year he played.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was with Atlanta, and he was with the White Sox. He won a batting championship. He should have won two of them. And that's the difference in the scouting today. They have 10 people look at him. They bring this equipment, take pictures of them, bring them back, and let everybody see them. And it just takes – I learned this from a great, great baseball man. Al Campana is probably one of the greatest baseball minds of all the people I ever worked with. And he told me, he said, when you get too many minds, said sometimes if you see a hitter and you really like him, and maybe there might be one guy where he might see a little flaw, he might see a little something, he mentions it, then everybody's got a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when it's on you, it's on you. You tell me if he can play or not. I'm going to tell you, hey, Andre Dawson can play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay? And I knew that, and nobody else did. We took him in the 11th round.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's a pretty good call.
That is. Now, Mel, you were on teams with the Diamondbacks, you said, and the Rangers when obviously the Diamondbacks were good. The Rangers were starting to be good.
That's right.
And now we're seeing the Blue Jays sort of on the same track, maybe in the process of being, you know, getting good, getting to the playoffs.
Yes.
Do you see the Jays, that happening to the Jays on a consistent basis in the next, say, 10 years?
Yes, I do. And I tell you why. Right now I'm in the middle of, and I told Alex this, and Perry Manassian is my immediate boss, even though I'm probably triple his age or whatever. But I love Perry. Perry's mm-hmm. a hell of a worker, and he's a hell of a guy, and Alex is too. And like I told him, I said, you know, everybody's pounding him right now. Oh, it's got to be Stroman. If you want to trade, we'll give you a pitcher for 2 months. But we want Stroman, Sanchez, Nolan, you know, and all these other guys. I said, let me tell you, you can blow away the whole thing. I said, you've done that a little bit before. Right now, we're just catching up. I just came from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two excellent major league-type pitching prospects there,
mm-hmm.
both Latins. Shortstop that is a legitimate 18-year-old that can play. A center fielder that reminds me of Ralph Garb.
Mm.
I mean, he's a leadoff guy that can fly. He's the first. I've been here now 4 years. He's the first guy I've seen that is a legitimate leadoff hitter. I'm talking about a guy that knows how to, is going to learn, and we're going to teach him in winter instructional when we get him, grind him and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he might be out there from 6 in the morning until 6 at night, but he'll be there and learning how to duck under balls and get on base, steal a base, score a run. Scoring runs is important. That's what wins games. Mm-hmm. So we've got a few of those guys there. I think also, and I'm going to see our Lansing club. I know we have 4 or 5 kids there. What it takes, and Al Campanis told me this, and he was one of the great, you know, Branch Rickey started all this stuff, and he was the key guy for Branch Rickey. And like he told me, he said, Mel, it takes 10 good pitching prospects to make 3. He said, when you think you have 10 good ones, they get hurt, their head goes off there, so you end up with 3. Same thing about players. You end up, if you have about 10, there's going to be 3 or 4, but you got to have numbers to create that. If you're lucky, you might get 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and when I was with the Expos, we were fortunate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we ended up with some horses. I mean, you know, the Cromartas, Valentines, Dawsons,
Carter,
my boy Parrish, Steve Rogers. I mean, we flipped them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next deal, I went to Seattle. We did the same thing. And then in Arizona, the second year, we won 100 games. That'll never happen again. And the fourth year, we won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And the key was, and a lot of people don't know this, the key was we needed, for the World Series, we needed a leadoff hitter. And I knew where there was one, and his name was Tony Womack. He wasn't a great shortstop. Good shortstop, little stiff hand, but partner could run and lead off, and he scored 100-something runs for us that year. And then we traded for Womack, we traded for Louis Gonzalez, and we traded for Schilling.
Schilling, yeah.
Those three guys, and we used 7 of our own players that we developed in 4 years to get those three.
Mm-hmm.
So there's importance in both ends to play for you and to get what you want when you need a key guy. And Louis Gonzalez was a key guy for us.
The documentary is Scouts Honor, the Mel Didier story. It will be premiering on Saturday, immediately following the Blue Jays-Yankees game in Sportsnet, and shown again on Sunday after the Blue Jays-Yankees game. You're the perfect person to ask this, Mel. Because we've talked about it a lot in this show. Everybody in baseball is talking about it, the number of pitching injuries right now in the game. What is your theory behind that? Is there? Is there anything behind it? Is it just genetics, fluke?
I think this. A good friend of mine is Nolan Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And last year, I visited with Nolan for about 30 minutes. Not 30 minutes, about 3 hours. And we talked about his pitching, and he never had problem. Now, he was an unusual person because, as I said, I remember telling my wife, I said, hey, I just saw a 45-year-old guy throw 95 miles an hour, and that was Nolan Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
His work ethics and all. But he said a couple of things to me. He said, number one, the kids don't throw enough.
Mm-hmm.
He said, number two, he said they don't run and work as hard. And number three, and the main thing, and if you watch pitchers, just watch this, Big League, they don't use that core I'd have to get up and demonstrate. But when you use your core, you follow through and you come through, and your core is from your knees up to your rib cage. And you've got to have some kind of core. He always had that. And he says what they'll do, they'll throw and they'll spin, spin off. And he says when you do that, this part right here has a tendency to pull. He says when you go at hitters and you go over your front leg and you and the core is there and the follow through, he says you will not have as many injuries. And he had put in a program at Texas that we used for a while, and it really worked. And when he ran, he didn't run just 50 yards like they do and then walk back. They ran pole to pole. You know what pole to pole is? That's foul pole, and they sprinted. And I mean, they did it a lot. And we put that in when I was – I told Nolan, I said, Nolan, I'd like to get this program. And so we did, and we're trying to get where our players – realize exactly what pitching is. I mean, it's not just a great arm and just throwing with your arm and spinning off to the right or left if you're a left-hander, but there's more to it than that. And the biggest thing is, for me, they can tell me what they want, change-ups, we need breaking ball, blah, blah. You got to be able to throw good fastballs low strikes. You got to be. Hitters will tell you that. They'll tell you that. And if you can do that, you'll be consistent and you'll win. And the guy that can do that, now change of speeds is important. You got to have that. You got to have a breaking ball. We know all that. But the basic is still a good fastball. Can you imagine the big guy that pitches for the Mets now? Big
Matt
Cologne.
Cologne, sorry,
85%, you know this, you're going to face him. 85% is fastball, and they ain't going to be 95, they're going to be 88, 90, but he's on the black, he's right here, he's there, and you know that. He's not using any gimmicks, not like balls falling out of the ceiling and all that, which proves a point. If you can do it, you can win. I don't care where you are. So I'm a great believer in that, and I think that I think you have to do some long tossing involved in it to help your arm strength, those things. But I don't believe our kids throw enough. We, you know, as young kids, we used to throw all the time. We'd throw different rocks, might be anything. But today, kids don't play. They go out, they practice 2 hours, broop, they're back, they're looking at some TV or, you know, the deals here. And so they just don't play as much. And arm strength is a hell of a plus for any player. I don't care whether he's a pitcher or anything else.
Mel, is there something that will turn you off about a player instantly? If you're out watching a guy, if somebody said, or you've seen a guy, there's something that you'll look at and go, nope, not happening.
Well,
that's probably unfair because it might be different for hitters and pitchers, right?
Yeah, it is too. But still in all, the lack of drive and hustle. And also, when a player gets in a certain situation, and they're always, this will always happen, whether it be winning run on third, tying run on second, whether it be striking out a hitter or getting a hitter out with the bases loaded, when a player gets in those positions, I like to see a player that will step up and be counted, so to speak. In other words, he's going to go after you. He's not afraid. And if you have that, I'll tell you what, you'll find out that in most cases, most players, have that. They'll have something inside that we always like to talk about. You know, you can't, you'd like to cut a player open and look inside. Well, he'll probably have that. And that's a big item. The great players all have it. And you can go to the little guys, Pedroia, who has it, Buku. You can go to the big guys that have it, Kirk Gibson, and they'll run over you. They'll do whatever it takes. And to me, that's a big, big item in the success of a good athlete.
You know, yesterday we saw a remarkable pitching. Well, I don't know, remarkable. It may become the norm in some ways. A Marcus Stroman throwing 7 innings of one hit ball against the Red Sox, carried a no hitter. Small guy, strong guy.
Strong guy.
What's your take on Marcus Stroman as a pitcher, Mel? And what has to happen for him to turn into a long term major league pitcher?
I think he's well on his way turning into that. He's learning, and he's smart enough to pick up things. He's learning that his breaking ball is going to play a big part, not the fact that he's going to throw every pitch a breaking ball, and his off-speed stuff is going to make his 93 to 96 mile an hour fastball is going to make it look faster because he uses those pitches now rather than talk about them and don't use them or use them very little and can't throw them over for a strike. Now he gets that ball over. All of a sudden, hitters are looking at his breaking ball, and he's throwing a strike for it. And it's a good breaking ball. It's a downer.
Yeah.
And any ball that goes this way is always tough to handle, whether it be a screwball, whether it be a curveball, no matter what. I think he has some stuff that in him, and I sense this. I didn't know whether he'd be a relief pitcher or a starter because of the size. In fact, and I'll admit this, I'm not one of these guys that say, well, I told you he was going to be great. He's not great yet, but I thought he might be better in the bullpen because of his size. But stamina, arm strength, and he has good knowledge. He's learning. And he has good knowledge about how he wants to get hitters out. And there is a way to get them out. And he's got that. And he's got good enough stuff to get him out. I think the guy has a chance to really become a solid number 3-2 guy, you know, and really be a good, strong major league pitcher.
Now, Mel, real quick, let me ask you we all know the problems with the Jays going to Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
That for some odd reason, they just can't win there. I think they're 0 for their last 16. They're like 3 for their last, I don't know, 26 or so.
That's
yeah,
right.
Something like that. You being a great mind that you are, if you're John Gibbons, what would you say to your team, or what would you even do to your team different going to a place like that?
That's hard to say. I know this, that I guess the Yankee Stadium thing has had a lot of teams doing just what you said. You know, they've had that sort of this Yankee Stadium, man. You know, the Yankees, and it's a difficult thing sometimes to overcome. I don't know exactly. I don't know the nature of our club that well. I know them, but I mean the real nature of our club. I know they want to win, and I know they're playing hard. I admire Batista and those guys. They're trying to get after it as hard as they can day in and day out, and that's been one of the things that's been better for us this year than in the past. The biggest thing I think is the fact that they've got to play solid baseball, not phenomenal, but solid baseball. Catch the ball, run the bases and all that, and not let that stadium dictate what they should or would do, but just play the game that they know how to play. I mean, just get after it as hard as you can, to me, and – let the chips fall where they may. Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
Yeah, Kevin and I were talking about this. One of the things to that end, John Gibbons told us yesterday, I'm going to tell him take BP in the cage. Don't bother going out and looking at the Yankeeography and all the stuff. He said you can do that some other time. Mel, listen, it was really great of you to join us. We could talk for 2 hours. Luckily, the documentary Scouts Honor the Mel Didier Story, you all can watch it tomorrow, immediately following the Jays-Yankees game on Sportsnet, and the documentary will be re-shown again on Sunday. Mel Didier, it's always a great pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day today. And like I said, we really appreciate this. It's been a real treat.
Yeah, thanks, Mel.
Thank you very much. I enjoy being here, and I'm just hoping that we might pull the Blue Jays through somewhere along the way in the next year, two, three.
Mm-hmm. Well, see what happens this week. This weekend might be a bit of a start for him.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Mel,
yeah.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, brought to you by Home Hardware on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Baseball Central for Friday. I'm Jeff Blair, joined by Kevin Barker. We are brought to you, as always, by Home Hardware. Time now for our Ask the Experts segment, or the Ask the Kevin Barker segment. We've just got a little bit of time for this, Kevin, but it's a great question. With the Jays having so many power hitters, for the infielder the Jays are looking for, would it be better if the player's a contact hitter, such as Martin Prado with the Diamondbacks, to get more players on base? That question submitted by Weber. And Kevin, I'll let you have at it first, because I know we agree on this.
Well, I've always said that they need a guy that hits behind Reyes, that can put pressure on defenses, that hits in front of Edwin and Batista, just to put pressure on defenses. And I've always said that Melky Cabrera needs to be hitting down in the lineup, which means behind the two big guys to drive in runs. I think if he could hit fifth, maybe sixth, that would put a lot of pressure on defenses, especially when a switch hitter can hit down in the lineup with power. And it would only help defenses. It would also help the pitching staff for the Jays, because the more runs you score early, and we all know that the Jays are a much better team when they score first. So I've always said it's a huge deal to have that guy that is a situational hitter more than a guy that hits the ball out of the yard.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of having that switch hitter down lower in the lineup, because you get to extra innings. Now you've given the opposing – or I'm sorry, not extra innings, but late innings. Now you've given the opposing manager – a lot to think about.
Yeah, and Cabrera may be the best hitter on the team on both sides of the plate.
I would argue start to finish, he's been their best position player this
year.
From day one to right now, he's been their best position player. Ah, man, I'm still thinking about...
Mel's awesome. Can we call and get him back in here? We got two more minutes. That's amazing, man.
The guy has seen Joe DiMaggio and Willie Mays, and he can make a comparison between the two of them based on what he saw. You know what? If I was around then, DiMaggio would have been my favorite player.
He gives me chills, man.
He's the one guy that I didn't get, that I've never been able to see in baseball, that I would love to see play. That is it for Baseball Central today. Don't forget, the Jays are in Yankee Stadium for 3 games tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll have the games right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and of course on Sportsnet, Scouts Honor, the Mel Didier Story. We'll be showing on Sportsnet following Saturday's Jays-Yankees game, and again on Sunday. And trust me, you do not want to miss it. If you think the interview with Mel Didier this morning was great, wait till you see the documentary. It's terrific. For Kevin Barker, Mel Didier, I'm Jeff Blair, saying thanks so much for joining us in Baseball Central today. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.